Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies Energy Transition podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm Distinguished Research Fellow at the Institute. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by Naziri Issa-Dirica, who's a Research Associate at the OAS, and we're here today to discuss the key messages that came from his insight, Scaling CCUS in Canada, an assessment of fiscal and regulatory frameworks that he co-authored with Hassan Bousselmani, who's head of carbon management research, and Bassam Fatou, who's director of the OIES. And the insight was published by the Institute in April 2023. Now, just to timestamp this podcast, we're recording it on the afternoon UK time on Friday, the 5th of May, 2023. Naziri, welcome back to the OIS podcast series.
Thanks, David. Hello. It's nice to be here. Nice to be back recording with you.
Fantastic. Well, look, why don't we start by kind of talking about kind of your start to the insight, which had a very strong statement referencing Canada as a decarbonisation battleground. Can you perhaps expand on what you mean by that?
Yeah, so Canada has been a strong advocate of the Paris Climate Agreement, as well as other climate protocols before and since then. The country's target of reducing emissions by 40 to 45% compared to the 2005 level is one of the strongest made by any country in the world. And yet, crude oil makes up nearly 15% of Canada's exports by value and over 7% of national GDP. The oil sands, which are branded as energy intensive, make up most of this production, adding further complexity to the country's position.
So how are existing carbon capture usage and storage, you know, CCUS projects in Canada actually performing?
There are three major CCUS projects in Canada. The first one, Boundary Dam, which was installed at a coal power plant in Saskatchewan, has had some operational issues, but has generally performed at a decent level. Now, it did have a lower emissions capture target compared to, say, a modern CCUS project, but it's performed decently in the last couple of years. The other two, which are centered around hydrogen and ammonia production plants in the upgrading, refining heartland of Alberta, are generally acclaimed to be world-class. Quest is a Shell Canada project that captures CO2 and stores it in a deep saline reservoir. The Alberta Carbon Trunk Line, ACTL, is supported by two carbon capture plants, one at a refinery, the other at a fertilizer plant. And it transports carbon dioxide 240 kilometers for use in enhanced oil recovery. Both of these are performing close to or above target capture rates. And Quest in particular has been operating without any major issues for 8 years in a row now.
Now, so your insight references CCUS in Canada, but then focuses almost entirely on Alberta. So are other provinces looking at CCUS?
Outside of Saskatchewan and maybe British Columbia, CCUS is unlikely to take root in much of Canada for various reasons, including geography, proximity to large point sources, and frankly, economics. The reality is that CCUS is an expensive emissions reduction tool. Levelized costs are currently around $74 Canadian per ton. And most of these companies or provinces don't have enough scale or financial incentive to deploy it as a decarbonization tool.
Okay, now, in your opinion, therefore, you know, what is the biggest roadblock to CCUS achieving scale in Canada?
We just talked about one of them. You know, cost is the primary reason. Compared to other carbon reduction tools, such as energy efficiency or even energy switching, CCUS is considered very expensive. In addition, collaboration between the largest players and their ability to tie in smaller emissions contributors along their value chain to truly create viable CCUS hubs is probably the next roadblock.
Okay, so how is your answer, therefore, to the previous question impacted by the tipping point that you reference in the insight itself?
So if you talk about cost, I think the that's probably the biggest X factor that has been, I wouldn't say neutralized, but certainly maybe addressed by carbon pricing. So carbon pricing has created a natural tipping point where the cost of compliance exceeds the cost of mitigation or will exceed the cost of mitigation by the middle of this decade. So essentially, after 2026, CCUS will be a preferred alternative, assuming companies have the required upfront capital to paying the carbon price. So that should eliminate that as a risk. And then the focus now becomes around the collaboration that most of the companies have actually started putting together through the Pathways Initiative to drive down their pricing risk.
So in your insight, you refer to the Canadian Investment Tax Credit, or ITC. Now, how does that ITC compare to its US counterpart?
So the ITC is a true investment credit, whereas the US 45Q, which is the regulation code, is actually more, although called an ITC as well, is actually more of a production credit. In addition, the ITC can only be used for equipment purchases and cannot apply to projects where EOR is an end use. So only geographical storage of CO2 is allowed. So overall, the ITC is expected to offset anywhere between 15 to 30% of the project costs, whereas the US 45Q can offset well over 50%, likely close to 60% of total project and operating costs. And that does not even include additional value from any CCUS projects that are used in EOR in the US.
Well, Naziri, let's talk about carbon management for a few minutes. You know, what are the major regulatory differences between Canada and US when it comes to carbon management?
So in the US, they've largely deployed the 45Q as their tool. So it's, you can think of it as an economic lever. In Canada, they've deployed two levers. You know, they have, you have the economic lever of the ITC, but you also have what I call the stick, you know, which is carbon pricing. And this is this dual approach is often missed, or I would say understated, by many analysts. Past the tipping point, carbon pricing is a potential benefit and often not thought of as such if it is viewed as an avoided cost. I call it that because it allows operators to continue having a social license to operate and extends the useful life of their assets. For investors, however, it is definitely not as attractive as equivalent projects in the US.
Now, there are some concerns that implementing CCUS projects will result in a flood of emissions credits and offsets. Now, do you think, Naziri, this is a real risk?
Yes, it is. Due to the large amounts of CO2 that a typical CCUS project will capture and store, if several operators, as it appears to be right now, implement these projects around the same time, the number of available sequestration credits, which is what they're being called, could increase dramatically and could be higher than the net compliance obligation by all players in the market. So this could result in the actual price that's being traded being much lower than the signal that has been set by the federal carbon price, and therefore, again, could act as a disincentive to actually mitigate or actually reduce emissions, which is the actual goal.
Okay, now, in your insight, you outlined some measures that could be taken to maintain the equilibrium between the supply of credits and offsets. Can you perhaps briefly touch on these and share your views with our listeners?
Yeah, to be fair, many of these have already been implemented or are starting to be implemented through the latest updates to the provincial emissions regulation in Alberta, which again is expected to be the home and the primary hub of CCUS activity. But they may need to do more within those frameworks. So the two I'll focus on are what we call the tightening rate and then the validity period for the credits. So starting with the validity period for the credits, in the past, you had about 8 or 9 years before a credit could expire. So if a company actually reduced emissions by a certain amount, they had about 8 or 9 years to use that credit. But now that period has been reduced to 5 years. And the goal is to actually reduce the flood or the volume of credits in the market. So that's something that could be further tightened with sequestration credits, where maybe you could reduce that to 3 years or even 2 years. The second one is called the tightening rate. So when the initial carbon pricing mechanism was set in Alberta, every company was given sort of was told, okay, this is the best performance in your group of assets. We're going to set the target to 90% of that, and you all need to meet that target of 90%. And then every year you need to, we're reducing that by 1% more every year. That's called the tightening rate. So over 10 years, you're essentially looking at 80% of what the initial target was. Well, what they've done and what they may need to continue adjusting based on market dynamics is to actually increase that tightening rate, which will then reduce or increase the net obligation that companies have. So some companies obviously will be below, but there will be companies that don't implement CCUS that will now have a larger obligation that needs to be met in order for them to avoid paying the carbon price. And that's where the value of those sequestration credits comes into play, because companies will have to purchase those to meet their obligation.
Okay, well, Naziri, as we kind of come to the end of this podcast, you know, perhaps a rather broad question, you know, in summary, would you say that there's enough of an incentive for CCUS to be broadly deployed in Canada?
Yes, there is. You know, that to me, that's probably a touchy subject in Canada, you know, because more can always be done from a regulatory standpoint to make projects even more economic for operators and give them sort of that real push to get the ball rolling. However, when those two regulatory levers are taken into consideration, there's enough to get the ball rolling and demonstrate that CCUS can be scaled and can be a solution to significant emissions reduction in Canada. And I think that demonstration is required to ensure that CCUS can be scaled broadly in the country.
Well, fantastic, Naziri. You know, thank you so much for your time. And I really, as always, enjoyed our conversation that builds on the messages from your insights, Scaling CCUS in Canada, an Assessment of Fiscal and Regulatory Frameworks, that was, as I said earlier, published by the Institute in April 2023. So I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.